many sons of Angira. So the chapter is describing the genealogical table of the daughters of Manu, and it continues to describe more and more. So I will not really, it is the custom to not give a commentary when the acharyas have not given a commentary. So I'll not really give a commentary by trying to give big insights into the presentation, but I just wanted to put it in the context and say, just so that we remember, Atri Muni had performed austerities to please the Supreme Lord, to please the Lord, but he had addressed the Lord in such a way that it wasn't really clear which deity he was addressing. And therefore the result was that three deities manifest. Lord Vishnu appeared, Lord Shiva appeared, and Lord Brahma appeared after he had performed particular austerity and worship and had satisfied the Lord like that. So this was, of course, he was an extraordinary qualified personality that such a thing could happen. But we see that in spite of all his great qualities and abilities, that still he didn't have the same level of understanding about the absolute truth that any member of ISKCON would have. Right? So we see how personal qualification is secondary to the mercy of the parampara, and that by the mercy of the parampara, even one who is less qualified can be very quickly elevated in his understanding of the absolute truth beyond the level of a highly qualified person. And this is one of the essential elements of the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which picks up the most fallen. And this particular incident with Atri Muni really illustrates that point very nicely. Then we're continuing with text 34. Angira's wife, Shraddha, gave birth to four daughters named Shinivali, Kuhu, Raka, and Anumati. Besides these four daughters, she had also another two sons. One of them was known as Utatya, and the other was the learned scholar Brihaspati. Pulascha begotten his wife Havirbhu, one son of the name Agastya, who in the next birth became Darakni. Besides him, Pulascha begot another very great and saintly son whose name was Visrava. Visrava had two wives. The first wife was Idavida, from whom Kuvira, the master of all yakshas, was born. And the next wife was named Keshini, from whom three sons were born, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, and Vibhishana. Gati, the wife of the sage Pulaha, gave birth to three sons named Karmashrestha, Varyan, and Sahisnu, and all of them were great sages. Purport. Gati, the wife of Pulaha, was the fifth daughter of Kardama Muni. She was very faithful to her husband, and all her sons were as good as he. That was a little purport. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Ginandana Salakya Chakshur Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So in looking at the genealogical table of the daughters of Manu, we are seeing how the universe is populating and with various great personalities. Sometimes we see how different deities come about. Like the other day, we read how Devakulya, who has now been identified as a daughter, became Ganga. And now, in this particular verse, we are seeing that not only exalted personalities are taking their birth, not only powerful great sages, but every once in a while also powerful demons like Ravana and Kumbhakarna are mentioned here, who were extraordinary demons. So we discussed this point also on the appearance day of Lord Ramachandra. We were reading for a little while from the Ramayana, and we saw descriptions of how terrible demons were flying in the sky and were coming down and devouring different sages and brahmanas. Right? They were just eating them. And then you're wondering, how is this possible in a previous yuga where the conditions were much better than in Kali Yuga? That doesn't even happen to us, right? I mean, Kali Yuga is not that bad yet that demons are coming from the sky to devour the brahmanas, right? We are being harassed a little bit, but we are not being devoured by flying rakshasas. So it seems that the previous yuga were worse, but that's not the case. But actually what was happening was that everyone was more powerful. The devotees were more powerful, the demons were more powerful. So in that context, one can understand that at that time, there were also very, very powerful demons. Prabhupada mentions, though, that still there are some very powerful rakshasas in the world. For example, in one lecture, Prabhupada commented that the Yeti, the terrible snowman, is a rakshasa, is a big rakshasa, very big feet, big size, who is a man-eater, yeah, Prabhupada stated. Yes, and he said it in remote places, still such rakshasas are residing, and he also mentioned in Africa and so on, in deep in the jungles. Yeah. So what can be said? That in previous yugas, all living beings had a lot more personal power than in this yuga. In this yuga, personal power is diminished very much, not only on the physical plane, but also on the mental plane and on the level of intelligence. So in this age, more than any other age, we are depending on guidance, because our intelligence is less potent than ever. Nonetheless, due to that fact that the intelligence is less potent than ever, we lack the insight to understand how dependent we are. We think, no, we are capable of judging for ourselves. This is our foolishness, a sign of lack of intelligence. So the personalities that appear in the dynasty of Manu were originally very, very qualified. Therefore, the idea that the universe is undergoing an evolution where gradually the standard of life is increasing and improving is false. And rather, it is the opposite. There is a gradual degradation going on within the universe. And if we're looking at ancient times up to this point, gradually, man is degrading everything, the world is degrading, the conditions are degrading, until the end of this age of Kali, when again the Satya Yuga will begin. There are still various personalities, saintly personalities, who are residing in the Himalayas and who are highly qualified and who are very self-realized and who are waiting. Even they have the benediction that they will be able to live till the end of the Kalpa, and therefore they will be able to live till the end of this age of Kali. And their particular mission will be that when the entire population of the earth will become demoniac and there will be no more religion, and when Kalki will finally appear to kill all of them, then after that is done, then such sages will come from the Himalayas and start up again yajna and sacrifice. And then gradually auspicious breezes will begin to blow and the entire influence of Kali Yuga will just disappear and another Satya Yuga will begin after they have performed their sacrifice. So, invisible to us, right, who think that we have figured out the entire world, who think that we know exactly what's going on. Invisible to us, so many things are also going on, right, on a more hidden plane and on a plane of abilities beyond us, both in the on the demoniac plane as well as on the positive plane. So this is difficult to understand and accept for modern man, who's very convinced that we've basically figured out what exists on the planet. But of course, we know there are many mysteries that are unsolved and unclear. And Srimad Bhagavatam extends our perspective on these matters and gives us a whole explanation of how everything is serving the purpose of the Supreme Lord. In the same way, Manu is essential in creating order within the universe, and the family members appearing from Manu are appearing for that purpose, to create religious order within the universe, because ultimately the purpose of the universe is spiritual. Krishna has designed the material world for only one purpose, to bring its residence to spiritual life. And therefore the hidden purpose of the world is to come to self-realization. And every single living being within the world will be somehow or other pushed by the three modes of material nature towards self-realization. It may take, it may be very gradual, it may be very slow, but this is actually what is going on. Although it may not be always possible to perceive this for the conditioned soul. But one who is seeing through transcendental knowledge and who has assimilated Srimad Bhagavatam can actually see this point, that behind, that the very purpose behind the entire material existence is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that actually He's the hidden goal, He is the objective of all our activities. It is so nice once one understands this basic principle, because then one can measure every situation, any condition of life, in the context of that goal, in the context of the goal of devotional service. And if it's favorable for devotional service, it is good. If it's not favorable for devotional service, not good. Everything becomes very, very simple in that way. So there are many issues and questions in life that are very difficult to solve. Dilemmas, what to do. We use the classical example of abortion. To kill or not to kill the child in the womb. If this child is deformed, and they have already seen it with a scanner, right? They have already seen it with a scanner, and they know that the child is probably having some serious handicap, possibly even brain damage, right? Should we in that case, wouldn't it be better to just abort that child rather than let it come in the world and go through so much suffering and so on? And it will be better for the child to relieve it from its miserable condition. And so it is an act of mercy to kill that child. So it is felt. So there is a whole justification, very noble considerations, apparently, apparently. There are arguments and reasons which sound like, yes, it must be done. So this is interesting. It is interesting to understand these kind of motivations and reasons that come up of special circumstances wherein the act seems to be justified. Whereas in Krishna consciousness, it is simply rejected. It is simply not accepted. It is not considered, take the burden of looking after that child with its handicap and so on. And somehow or other, doesn't matter, give it prasadam, right? Somehow or other, engage it in some sort of program for its spiritual betterment, and one can still even benedict a retarded child and so on, yeah? So there is a whole different perspective. As soon as we see everything in relation to Krishna and into devotional service and into making spiritual advancement, then everything changes. Then everything becomes different. Our values change, our judgment changes. So in this way, it is very important to understand these things. And we are looking like that at Srimad Bhagavatam. To see how the entire arrangement within the universe is going on by the on a plan, a design of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that is like the most important reason why we're reading about all these personalities: Pulastya, begotten his wife Havir Bhu, one son named Agastya. All right, Agastya, of course, was a powerful personality. And from many of these powerful personalities were instrumental in bringing various philosophies into the universe. These philosophies were not always favorable for Krishna consciousness, but the point was that these different views and philosophies will always be there in the minds of conditioned souls. Conditioned souls need to not only that the universe is a facility to surrender, the universe is also a facility to be in Maya, both. The universe serves two purposes. One is the purpose is to bring everyone to devotional service, and the other purpose of the universe, which is a temporary purpose, is to allow everyone to be in Maya, and both are required. Right? Ultimately, behind this Maya, Krishna arranges it that there's enough push to gradually bring someone to spiritual life, either through inspirational means or through suffering. But it is interesting that the material world is simultaneously an arrangement to bring us to devotional service and an arrangement to be in Maya. So we're seeing that some of the sages are passing on knowledge which is meant to bring us closer to the Supreme Lord. And others of the great personalities are laying the foundation for different philosophies that are influenced by Maya, so that one, such as impersonalism and other these type of philosophies. So it is interesting how even in the classic times we're seeing that there are some of the founders of different philosophies, like Astavraka, who is like the founder of impersonalism, for example, isn't it? Is Astavraka? Yeah. Okay. But that impersonalism is not connected to the Vedic literature. He simply had developed an impersonalist philosophy which was existing separate from the philosophy of Vedanta, which was taught by Vyas. But then we see that Sankaracharya combines the two. He takes what Vyas did and gives an explanation which is according to the philosophy of Astavraka. And in this way, he gives an impersonalist explanation of Vedanta, which is considered more serious. Anyhow, so all these personalities are there, and they are doing like the foundation work within the universe. Others are simply following in the directions that they established. And in this way, a lot of fundamental work is being done under the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, and various great personalities appear for that purpose. So, in that way we can see how there is an order in the universe, and how there is an arrangement of the Supreme Lord. And this is important, because then from our present condition we can also remember that, although it may not be so easily perceived just for a common person. But anyone who has been in contact with Srimad Bhagavatam is no longer a common person, because Srimad Bhagavatam has the potency to transform common people to an extraordinary level, to lift up the most common person to the transcendental level. So this is again another point to establish that that Krishna consciousness is not dependent on birth, but that rather it is dependent on consciousness. Because we see that that the whole purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to bring about a change of consciousness, which is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam makes such many such statements. Srimvata svakata krishna punya sravana kirtanam ridhi abhidraniyantastu vidunati suritsitam. Basically pointing out that transcendental sound vibration has the potency to purify the heart and to remove the anartas from the heart. The anartas within the heart are actually the seeds of karma. In this way, by hearing transcendental knowledge, all karma is being destroyed. Karma grantini bandana, it is said. The knot of karma is being cut by this process. Yad anujasina yukta. So like this, we are seeing that Srimad Bhagavatam again and again is pointing out that it can remove the karma of a person, which means it can uplift a person beyond the restrictions that he is now experiencing due to previous karma. Therefore, karma is particularly referring to the condition of birth, because at the condition of birth, we have a particular karma. But the process of devotional service can lift anyone above karma. And therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam very clearly established that everyone is qualified, and that everyone can be purified, and everyone can be uplifted to the transcendental platform. So this is a very important principle, and in this manner, we can easily defeat those who adhere to the philosophy that one must be qualified by birth. These misconceptions can be easily defeated. So, but it is also important for ourselves to understand that we can change. Because one may feel that Krishna consciousness is a very beautiful thing, but I myself am struggling so much just to even come to the basic level, and maybe that is too high for me. Maybe I'm not ready for this. Maybe it's not me. Maybe it's like a very good thing, but maybe it doesn't fit for me. Maybe I should just function on another level. But we should understand that it's not who we are. It is not in what condition we are born. It is not what our present condition is. The process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is so potent that it can transform us, irregardless of who we are. So this is an important point for our faith, so that we can actually make the sacrifice and apply ourselves, and that we can redirect our lives on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, without even having some immediate results. Just as when there is a very good doctor, then one is having faith to follow a whole rigid discipline of medical treatment without immediately getting result, but we do it because we believe this doctor is very expert, very good, therefore I'm sure it's going to work, and I'm going to do it. Right? So in the same way, by hearing about Srimad Bhagavatam, we get this faith where we can actually make the sacrifice of redirecting our life according to the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam without immediately getting the realization. Because Krishna consciousness is not based on instant realization. Tapo divyam putrake yena sattvam sudyat yasmat brahma sukhyam tanantam. Austerity is certainly one of the prerequisites in Krishna consciousness. One must make sacrifice, and only then can we actually become qualified. So it is interesting to see how Krishna is working through many living beings, and he doesn't need to do so. It is not required for Krishna to manage the universal affairs through personalities, because Krishna is totally potent. He is all-pervading and omniscient. He is so powerful that Krishna, just by desire, can manifest whatever he likes. So it's not that Krishna is dependent on all kinds of assistance. When we have to undertake a big task, we need some help, you know. Please help me, you know, like I have to do this all myself. It's too much. I need some help. Right? This is because we are limited. And therefore, if we have a big task to undertake, we need many assistants. But Krishna, he doesn't need all these demigods nor all these personalities to perform the various tasks of the administration of the universe and of the order within the universe. That's not required. But what Krishna is doing so, not because he needs it, but because they need it. Right? Because these personalities need that. They need the mercy of being able to engage in devotional service. Because it may be mixed devotional service, because these great personalities many times are also attached to all the material benefits they are getting from living on higher planetary systems and so on. But nonetheless, they are making spiritual advancement by serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the arrangement of working through many, many personalities is an arrangement which is required for those personalities, not for Krishna. Krishna doesn't depend on any help or anything like that. So it is the kind mercy of Krishna that he works through so many agents to manage universal affairs. It is an opportunity to bring devotional service within the universe. So it's actually not to that Krishna needs a whole bureaucracy to make the universe function nicely, and all the different departments of it must work nicely, so there must be many different representatives of Krishna's government. No, it is simply Krishna is offering an opportunity for personalities who are pious within this universe to render some service, and in this way to disseminate devotional service within the universe. So this particular dynasty from Manu is a dynasty through which devotional service is coming into the universe. Of course, I've mentioned sometimes some demons also, but many of these personalities are known as being very pious and dedicated to the mission of the Supreme Lord, and that is the primary purpose of it. So it's part of Krishna's plan to bring devotional service into the universe. That in the higher planetary systems, everything is more spiritual. That there is constant remembrance. it is said that the householders, they remain within Bhuvar Swaha, or they go in this particular planet, in the planetary systems of planet Earth. They go to heavenly planets, but they don't go beyond. But those who are giving up the desire for sense gratification, at least on the gross platform, and who are trying to dedicate a life to cultivating spiritual consciousness through austerities and making sacrifice and giving in charity and so on, cultivating knowledge, yoga, etc. Such personalities can take their birth on the Janar, Mahar, and Tapa lokas, which are above the heavenly planets. And there, everyone is engaged in trying to cultivate transcendental knowledge and transcendental consciousness. So everyone is somehow or other busy with some form of self-realization. Whereas on the heavenly planets, everyone is involved in pious activity, everyone is performed in offering worship to the Supreme Lord and enjoying. Right? So it is a great difference between what's happening in the heavenly planets and what is happening on the planets above, the planets of the sages, the Janamar and Tapalokas, which are still also, that is not necessarily a full understanding of who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? That full understanding of who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very rare. And even if there is an understanding on the topmost planets that Lord Vishnu is the ultimate Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it may not necessarily be understood that Lord Krishna is the origin of Lord Vishnu. That may not be known. So even Lord Brahma was bewildered on this point. Although Lord Brahma certainly accepted Narayan as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet he was bewildered in his understanding that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indra was bewildered at one point in time. So we're seeing that even the most exalted personalities in within the universe do not have that same complete knowledge, which is delivered by the acharyas who are coming in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who are delivering the knowledge of the spiritual world. Golokire Premadana Harinam Sankirtana. That this is actually, this Sankirtan movement is simply manifesting the love of God of Kolok right here in this world. So it is quite amazing what an exalted movement this is. And we're seeing that devotional service goes way beyond even the position of the demigods. We find in Srimad Bhagavatam the description of the departure of Prithu Maharaj and Queen Archie and how they were leaving their bodies. First, Prithu Maharaj left his body and his wife, they were at that time in a vanaprastha ashram residing in the forest, and the wife was lamenting for some time that her husband had died, but then she made arrangements for a funeral pyre and set fire to it, and then she entered it also herself. So it is said that then, at that point, two Vaikuntha planes were there. One for Prithu Maharaj, who was flying upwards, and another one for his wife, who was following. And they were going up and up and up and up, and they flew. And the demigods saw how these planes were flying up in the sky, and then they saw that they were flying past the heavenly planets, and just went up and up and up and up and up and appeared and disappeared out of sight. So this point is illustrated how pure devotional service is far beyond even the level of the most powerful and pious personalities within the universe. And then we, little ant-like creatures, right, simply by the mercy of the parampara, in spite of our total lack of qualification, in spite of being full of lust, in spite of being full of envy, in spite of being full of foolishness, still, in the midst of that, we are getting knowledge which by far exceeds anything that the greatest personalities in this universe even know. This is so amazing. And this is one of the things to contemplate on the special mercy of this Vaishnava Sampradaya. This is the glory of the Vaishnava Sampradayas. And therefore, we are also very open to the other three Vaishnava Sampradayas. Although the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya gives the topmost transcendental knowledge that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, and so on. Still, the other Sampradayas who may not fully capture that point, at least capture the Supreme Lord, and can take their worshippers to Vaikuntha, which in itself is so exalted, is such an exalted understanding, that we are ready to overlook the differences and say, yes, let us also accept these other Sampradayas. And this was the agenda of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who in Mayapur established on the temple in his mat the heads of the four Sampradayas who are sitting there as acharyas and are being worshipped and are every day receiving offerings, etc. Simply to establish, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta explained, that he had a desire to unify all the Sampradayas. Right? Of course, eventually, behind Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, eventually, we even want not only the conditioned souls to take the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but even the Vaishnavas, we want them to become aware of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we have a very special mission to bring transcendental knowledge about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the world. Not to just establish that the conclusion that who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but to also establish the means by which one can fully realize the personality of Godhead through the process of Harinam Sankirtan. Still, Srimad Bhagavatam is establishing beyond a doubt that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that devotional service to Him is the ultimate goal of life. Pumso paro dharmo yato bhakti radaksha jay. That devotional service is the ultimate spiritual activity, or the supreme occupation. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is the basis of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the study of Srimad Bhagavatam combined with the chanting of the holy name is the essence, is the topmost of all spiritual processes, of all spiritual knowledge. And that is not only because we are part of this club, right? There are many who belong to some group and who think that their group is the best. Even the other day, we came home at midnight, and we stood here at the front door, and there was a party upstairs, and somebody's birthday. So everyone was totally intoxicated, and someone came down the stairs with a, you know, like sounded like a herd of wild horses running down the stairs, and only two guys. So it was obvious that they were not totally clean, right? So, and they came storming down the stairs, and so the door opened, so I thought, well, that's just to soften the blow, you know, that suddenly there's a few Hare Krishnas standing there while they're coming drunk out of the door. Let me just in a half-joking way let them know that we're here. So I called out, Hari Hari, right? You know, I thought if it say straight Hare Krishna may be too strong for them, so I'll just say Hari Hari, right? It sounds a little more, so. And then immediately one of them goes, ah, yucks, ah, yucks, ah, yucks, you know. And So later, which is pretty gross and typical Amsterdam, I was thinking about it though afterwards, and I was thinking, he's actually telling me indirectly that, look, man, back off. I've got my own club, you know. I have nothing to do with your club. I've got my own club. Right? I mean, that must have been somewhere, whether he was fully conscious or what, but out of some sort of, I've got my own club mood. He said, Ajax, Ajax. So I'm thinking about that. No. So everyone may feel they belong to a club, and everyone thinks his club is the best. You know, my club, my thing, my way of life is the best. My club is the best. Where I belong is the best. So, you know, Jesus is the way, Allah, you know, and if you're not taking up Islam, right, then you are a non-believer, and according to the Quran, for those, you know, there is not much auspiciousness to experience. It is hell, damnation, and so many things, right, and such creatures are barely worth to exist, right. Anyone who doesn't accept the Quran, right? It's not just tolerated, it's condemned, right? Totally condemned. So we're seeing that everyone thinks he's got the best. So here we are now with the Haris, right? And again, the same old story. They think they are the best. Yes, but we are not simply proclaiming this is the topmost. We are also ready to give reason and argument, and to make a comparative study, and to present the reasons why. Obviously, it is established that if the Lord is recognized as Allah, as the all-pervading, as the all-omniscient, present personality of Godhead, the greatest, that is a great thing. But Prabhupada many times pointed out, he's also the smallest. Right, and not only that, if we are worshipping the Lord as the Lord of everything and all, then we're worshipping Him in His majestic feature. But yet, to worship Krishna in His personal feature is still higher. Lord Brahma saw these amazing pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan as a cowherd boy. And instead of being Narayan with four arms, who was worshipping, who was controlling the ultimate supreme Lord, right, the ultimate controller of all, right, the worshipable deity, he saw that Krishna, the supreme Lord, just came down from his spiritual realm and just residing with people of this world, and down to a human platform, mixing with them, playing with them, living a family life with them in Vrindavan, right in the family, carrying the shoes of his father on his head, drinking the milk of a mother, right? The Supreme Lord is Aja, unborn. What does he need a mother for? Right? And so on. But for the relationship. So therefore, it can be clearly understood and explained in much more detail than I'm going to do it now, how the relationship with Krishna and his devotees is of a higher nature. So in this way, we are not just establishing by some proclamation, Krishna consciousness is the greatest and the highest, our club is the best, but we're actually establishing it to reason and argument in comparative study, that actually Krishna consciousness is the most exalted philosophy. And therefore, we are not arrogant or just another sectarian group who are saying, we are having the best, Krishna consciousness is the only way, right? Which is basically what we're saying. It's very interesting. Christians may say, Jesus is the only way, but we are saying, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, right? We're saying it three times. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. Only chanting of the holy name is the process of becoming liberated in this age, right? Attaining perfection. So what's the difference between them and us? We're as fanatic as they are. And in that sense, right? Our slogans are as strong as theirs, you know? Jesus is the only way. Harinama eva kevalam. Right? There we go. But the difference is that we are basing this not only on some statements, like Jesus is the only way, is simply based on a few statements in the Bible, right? But there's no further purport, no further explanation how and what it means. It's therefore it's fundamentalism if one makes a statement on the basis of just a few quotes, right? That is fundamentalism. And fundamentalism is that one simply adheres to a belief without any argumentation and reasoning behind it. That one is simply therefore fundamentalism becomes mixed with fanaticism because there's no philosophy behind it. And the problem with that is obvious, that there is a lot of intolerance and condemnation and so on. But when there is logic and reason in understanding why and how, then one can explain, one can convince others, and one is not only accepting on the basis of statement in some scripture, but one is also understanding on the basis of intelligence. Then one can be truly convinced that yes, this is actually a fact, and so on. So therefore, Krishna consciousness is the topmost process, and we are most fortunate that now in this age, Lord Chaitanya has a plan to spread this Krishna consciousness all over the world, and it's begun, and it's touched the lives of many, and somehow or other, we don't know how, but somehow or other, it came in ours. It was not our plan. Nobody thought as a child. None of us thought when we were children, when thinking about the future, I'm going to be Hare Krishna. I thought of many things, but never of that I was going to be Hare Krishna. But it has happened. Amazing enough. Right? Amazing enough how it has come in our lives and has just taken over. This is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, actually. So, it's very interesting to see how those who have no qualification at all are getting the topmost. And when we look at this dynasty coming from Manu, we can really see that. How much less qualified we are than they, and yet we have knowledge higher than they have. Right? They do not. Even those who worship Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, still do not understand the intricacies of Radha and Krishna that they can't understand. Mm-hmm. Rarely understood, even amongst such personalities. Rarely. So how amazing that we understand. Amazing. So are there any questions, any comments?
If we have that higher knowledge, in India there are discussions sometimes.
Yeah.
So when some of the bits higher knowledge can others be surrendered, still we say that other sampradayas don't accept Gaudiya Vaishnava.
Yeah. Well, because between sampradayas, there are many points, many points of difference. It's not just on one point. So therefore, when it becomes so complex, then there are many tit-for-tat discussions. And the people within those sampradayas are obviously highly intelligent and qualified and learned. Yeah, just as within the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So, when differences of opinion come about between learned people, it is sometimes very difficult to establish the actual truths, because there are so many arguments and so much knowledge that is obscuring the issue, that then confusion can remain. And even if one gives good arguments. Like, for example, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a discussion between Gopinath Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And this is before Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is speaking for 7 days on philosophy of Vedanta to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there, in that discussion, Gopinath Acharya is giving valid arguments to establish why Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He gives a few quotes, he gives some logical arguments, right? And then, but he knows very well that although he gives good arguments, that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is not going to accept. Right? He's not going to accept, even although there's good arguments, right? And so later in the discussion, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is becoming a devotee, then he himself says, Tarka Shastra Jada Ami Yaicha Loha Pinda, which means that by becoming too much involved in all these scriptures and studying all these scriptures of logic, the result is that the heart has become as hard as an iron bar, which basically means that that by this logical study of wrong logic, right? It is also said in the same chapter, there's an opening verse, Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in different chapters, summarizes the mood of the chapter in an opening verse. And so in the opening verse, which is describing that discussion between Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in that opening verse, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is referred to as the reservoir of all bad logic. Right? So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is somehow or other very, very fixed in his logic, but it's all bad logic. And the result was that his heart became very hard because he's so convinced that I have thousands of arguments for my belief, you know. Who can even talk to me, you know? Who can even talk to me? I have thousands of arguments. I mean, you know, who's Gopinath Acharya? What does he know? Yes, he knows a little bit from scriptures, but what does he know? I know so much more than him, right? I can quote from so many scriptures all over the thing. I can't take him serious, right? I don't think that whatever argument he presents, that it's enough. Right. Because there are many arguments in other scriptures which exactly establish that the absolute truth is impersonal. And in this way, right? So in the same way, the Sri Sampradaya, there are so many quotes in the scriptures that establish that the worship of Narayan is the goal of life. Vasudeva Parakati. And so on and so on. They can just go on and on and on. Narayana Parayana. Therefore, when one sometimes gets too learned in the wrong arguments, then one's heart becomes hard like an iron bar, and one can no longer hear the good logic of the absolute truth. So then there can be big debate. So there has been big debate amongst the Vaishnava Sampradayas over the centuries. Different point. And there are big differences, and still are. Sometimes there's still criticism on the Gaudiya Sampradaya from the Madhavas and so on. Yeah. These things are going on. I think that pastime with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explains the underlying reasons for this, that it cannot be, why it's not resolved. Too attached to all the arguments that one knows.
So I miss your explanation of how Krishna consciousness is not fundamentalism taking particular course.
The reason is because fundamentalism is basically based on some statements. Jesus is the only way, right? okay, but what does it mean? You know, like, is there an explanation? No, it says here, it says in this verse, it says there, and that's it, you know, and there's nothing else, and that's it, you know. It's like, we don't care, we're not having any understanding with that, it's just, it says that, right? That's it, boom. So this is fundamentalism, right? Whereas Krishna consciousness is always based on logic and reason, right? So we're not only saying Krishna is the topmost, right? Like everybody is saying, my club is the topmost, my club is the best. No, we're saying why Krishna is the topmost. And we're explaining that because of rasa and so on, right? The relationship with Krishna are offering the highest opportunities of rasa, da 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 da. Krishna is manifesting himself in his original form, yes, from the spiritual sky. It's not just a matter of like Dharma, like other incarnations. He's not just establishing the principles of Dharma, like Lord Ramachandra, who acted always according to the rules of Dharma. Krishna breaks the rules of Dharma because Krishna is transcendental to Dharma. He steals, he goes with others' wives because he shows that it's simply all relating to rasa, right? And he's the reservoir of all pleasure, savai rasa, right? He is in that way... We have a whole understanding, right, logically, why Krishna is greater, yeah, than just a God concept. God is the greatest, God is the all-powerful, God is omniscient. So in this way, with logic and argument, one can understand that Krishna consciousness is superior. Therefore, it's not fundamentalist, because it's not just based on our scriptures say Krishna is the highest. No, our scriptures say Allah is the only way. Our scriptures say Jesus is the only way. And, you know, no, Krishna, no, Allah, no, Jesus, no. And a big religious war. Right? So it's not fundamentalist. And so we are not. Like, I was on a plane and some Indian lady living in London, because the plane was going to London and had a bit of an English drawl, so I could understand she lived in London. She said in Hindi to her husband, "Oh, look at that, you know, look at him. There's a religious fanatic," right? She says in Hindi. Yeah. So I turn around and I say, "Thank you very much." You know, I mean, have we met already? You know, yeah. You know, and they were totally, in Hindi, of course, you know, in Hindi, right? And he's like totally shocked, you know, like, oh, he speaks Hindi. After she was quiet for 30 seconds or something, and then she said to her husband, "He speaks Hindi." Anyways, so stupid people, religious fanatic, you know. We are not religious fanatic. Who's saying we are fanatic? I'm not fanatic. Looks pretty fanatic. No, we are not fanatic because fanaticism has a blind element. It's a blind element. We are simply acting fully on logic and reason. So we are reasonable people. Very reasonable. So fundamentalist is not reasonable.
Does that also apply to, like, we are principally followers of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, not so much even of the Vedic teaching, but of Srila Prabhupada's teachings? Can we also become fundamentalists?
Yeah, there are fundamentalists within our movement. There is fundamentalism. People who are just getting fanatic about certain ideas and who are just pushing it. We have all kinds of philosophies also floating around, like, for example, Ritvik philosophy, which is just something like newborn Christian. Because from that day on, you know, they are newborn Hare Krishnas. They are just Bible bashing. They just have their one philosophy. You can't even talk to them anymore. You know, you cannot walk in the door and say Hari Bol. Or, you know, within 2 minutes they start again, you know, they start preaching to you, you know. Ritvik is the only way, you know. Like, they say, back off, you know, leave me alone, you newborn Hare Krishna. And, you know, this is fanaticism. Because There is no deep logical basis for it. It is just based on a few quotes. And yes, this is it. This is the only way. And there is no more room for anything else. It's just these quotes. That's it. That's it. So there's no other argument. No, it's just these quotes. You know, there's just two letters from Prabhupada. And there's no other thing. No, it's just two mentions in the Bible. Jesus is the only way. And there's nothing else. No, nothing else. Nothing. No room. No. I can't hear you. No, there's no arguments. No, there's no discussion. No, this is it. This is it. You know, give us a break. You know, get lost. You know, I mean. Can we just be human beings and have our individual understandings of the text, maybe, and of the philosophy? And say, you understand it like this, I understand it like that. What is your reasons? What is your arguments? Can we have a discussion? Huh? Like, I saw years ago a discussion on a philosophical point, and I saw how Satsarup Maharaj presented himself, and he was saying that, well, from various Vedic source, or from various sources, I have collected these and these impressions. So my impression is that this is, in this issue, that the conclusion is this, and I'm presenting this before the Vaishnavas for their judgment, right? Boy, what a relief, right? Instead of just going in, and it is like this because I have these quotes here, and if you're not accepting it, strangle you, bang, 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 hit you over the head. Oh, boy, too much. So this fundamentalism also exists in our movement. I mean, when you start like, I know because I read this quote, and therefore I know, and, you know, it's like, look, you know, possibly there is also something else. Right? There may also be others. So in a forum of Vaishnavas, you know, but others also know something, because we've all been around, right? We've all been here now for a long time, and all of us have heard a lot, all of us have read a lot. So it's not a matter of that we should each go in our corner and just storm at each other with our horns and bang, you know, like, let's see whose horns are the hardest, right? And so on. No, we should just in a Brahminical way, in the mode of goodness, say, well, okay, it definitely appears to be like this and this and this because of these and these reasons. But then again, certainly open to hear your arguments. Yeah? Of course, some people just want to keep on arguing, and at one point, when you've heard the arguments and you've given plenty of reasonable arguments that really leave nothing standing of their philosophy, and then they still want to come back and argue and repeat the same arguments again, then at one point you say, get the lost. Get the lost, I don't want to hear your, I'm fed up with your stuff. So we have plenty of people around ISKCON who keep on presenting the same philosophies, which are all based on matchstick arguments, you know, useless arguments just hanging together, like, with really no strong reasoning at all. Then at one point we say, okay, good luck to you, you know, if this is what you want to believe, just go for your life, you know, we have no time for you. Just like this famous pandit was very learned, came to Vrindavan, and he had collected already on a scroll signatures of many people he had defeated, and now he wanted to debate with Sanatan Goswami to defeat him. Sanatan Goswami said, what do you want? You know, he said, no, I want to debate, and then, you know, after, if you are defeated, I want you to sign this this paper that you've been defeated. Sanatan Goswami, he said, I can sign it right now. There's no need to debate. I'll just sign it, you know. I mean, don't waste my time. Let's sign it. Yeah. Yeah. So this is, we're not getting into useless debate with a fundamentalist or with someone who is a reservoir of bad logic. Right? To spend a little arguing with people who are reservoirs of bad logic, okay, but if they keep on arguing, good luck to you, you know, like, we'll sign. Right? Leave us alone, you know. Go find somebody else. Newborn Hare Krishnas. Yeah. Born again Krishnas. Yeah. Born again. Born again Krishnas. It's really intense. Yes.
And what about the statement that one who gives up arguing is a loser?
Yeah, but that's not always true. That's not that you see in the example of Sanatan Goswami. He was saying, it's like,
later the story is with Jiva Goswami.
Okay, Jiva Goswami himself felt that he wanted to do something about it. But the bottom line is that it's not always necessary to just keep on arguing with everyone, because argument is such, right, that you can always, if you're very good at argument, you can just keep on arguing. A good lawyer can just keep on arguing. He keeps on arguing. This is the thing. So whether you can always lock somebody in so many arguments that he cannot escape anymore, in any case, that may not always be the way to do it. Sometimes what happens is that we are defeating the person in such a way that everyone can see that he is defeated, except the person himself. That happens many times. He keeps on arguing, no, he's not. And everyone is, after a while, people just say, look, you know, stop, you know, this is too much, you're defeated, right? You know, he says, no, I'm not defeated, I'm still there. It's like, you know, knife and scissors and all that. I mean, it's knife. No, it's scissors. We're going to cut with scissors. No, we're going to cut with knife. Knife, scissors, knife, scissors. If you say scissors one more time, I'll throw you in the river. Okay. Scissors. Right. Throw him in the water. He can't swim. He goes down. When he comes up, and when he comes up for the last time, the third time he comes up, still the hand above the water. Scissors, 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 scissors. Drowning. He's a drowning man. So sometimes, so this analogy of the scissor, knife, scissor thing illustrates the point that there is a class of men, they will never give up, and they'll just keep on arguing, even although they're drowning. Yeah. Wish them well. So say, okay, you know. But in certain public forum, if we don't accept, then it may be maybe not good. Because then we may appear to be the loser. And that's not favorable for Krishna consciousness. So therefore, Prabhupada said the preachers of Krishna consciousness must be ready to defeat their opponents with logic and argument. So that's, you know, to support your point also. It is definitely there. Yeah.
Maybe it's not so important point, but when he was telling that the qualification by God is very easy to defeat, I have two points maybe which totally contradict.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada said that it's in this kunada, like demigods or pure devotees and Krishna also in the Bhagavad Gita, that during that he continues from that point of his element, he continues his activities from the previous time. So,
yeah. There's no doubt, you know, that birth is important. And it's not just to be written off, you know, that it has no meaning at all. It has a lot of meaning. And we're seeing that also, you know, like we're seeing that different kinds of people come to this movement. Some come really from a very low mode of material nature, and some come from a higher, you know, just more from the mode of goodness. And it makes a big difference. If somebody joins in the mode of goodness, it makes it a lot easier, right, to make spiritual advancement than somebody from the mode of ignorance. So there's definitely a distinction according to birth. It's not to be ignored. But the process of Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it can purify anyone regardless, and then it can take one from the lowest mode of material nature and place him above one who took his birth really somewhere in the mode of goodness and very cultured and Vedic birth and so on. So because the Sankirtan movement, Srimad Bhagavatam, and the chanting of the holy name are so powerful. Extraordinarily powerful. It's amazing. That's our only hope then. Otherwise we're lost. Okay. Thanks very much. Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.